We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Greg Prince. In our next conversation, we'll ask about theological justifications of the ban. What does Greg Prince think about these justifications? We'll also ask one of the common questions. Will the LDS Church be forced to marry gay members in the LDS temples? What does Greg Prince think about that? We'll talk a little bit about the history of marriage in the LDS Church for heterosexual couples, and I think Greg has some interesting things right at the outset that you may find interesting. Check out our conversation. But before you do that, please give us a review on iTunes. That'll help more people find out more about our podcast and allow us to get more people to listen. Once again, give us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. Now back to our conversation.
Up until the late 1960s, within the United States, you could have a civil wedding ceremony and go to the temple the next day and be sealed.
Until the 60s?
Yeah, late 60s.
Wow.
And then somebody got a bee in his bonnet and said, no, that degrades the sacred nature of the temple. We're going to say you can't go in for a year. Now, at the same time they said that, they were already dealing with the reality that in foreign countries, and we didn't have many foreign temples then, so it wasn't that big a deal. We had the Swiss, the British, and the New Zealand temples. But nonetheless, there they were. And in those countries, the government does not recognize a religious ceremony. So if you want to be married, you have to go to an official of the government, the equivalent of a justice of the peace, or a court judge, and have the wedding ceremony performed. And in most countries, I think most countries in the world, that still is the case today. So in those countries, church has no choice. I mean, I suppose it could say, okay, get married, and then a year later, let's get you into the temple to be sealed. Well, in those countries, they say, oh, okay, you're married today, you go to the temple tomorrow. But they're still holding out in the U.S. Go figure. And it's not because of any scripture. It's because in some discussion at some point, somebody said, we need to emphasize this. And so the way we're going to do it is you have to wait a year.
So this brings it all the way back to what we started talking about at the beginning then. So the whole issue with the November policy was because of the gay policy, the policy.
Well, the policy was a reaction to the Supreme Court decision.
Right, right. And so I know some people, and I'd love to have you comment on this, have said, well, the government is going to force gay marriages in LDS temples. Do you see that, number one, do you see that happening, and do you think that's a rationale that the brethren think is...
Can you give me a single instance where the government has said to a Roman Catholic priest, you must perform the wedding of a Roman Catholic who has been divorced?
I can't.
Can you give me a single instance where a Jewish rabbi has been compelled by the government to perform a marriage of a Jew to a Gentile?
No.
Can you give me a single instance where an evangelical pastor has been compelled to perform an interracial marriage?
No, but I'm hearing this, that this is a justification for why we have the policy. So you're telling me that's a bad justification.
I'm telling you it's an empty justification. It's scare talk. It has no basis in reality. If you can find me one example in any of those other three categories, then we'll talk. Can you give me one example of the government compelling the church to allow somebody who does not hold a valid recommend to enter the temple for any purpose? No. See where we're going on this?
So that's a bad argument.
It's not just a bad argument, it's a bankrupt argument. There's no basis in reality for making that argument.
So why have this then?
Why have what?
Why have this policy?
Good question. If you find out the answer, let me know. I'll give you my phone number.
Now, one of the things that we did talk about, and I don't know that we fully answered that, was the other one of the.
We're not going to totally answer anything.
Was, well, it's about the children. We don't want the children to be conflicted if they have gay parents. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that?
I think it's bogus. Why would a same-sex couple want their child to be blessed or baptized if their intention was to turn it away from the church?
That's a great question.
The very fact that they want that ordinance performed says they're buying into this. They want to be part of that church community and they want their kids to be part of it. But we're saying, hell no.
So I take it you're against this policy.
I didn't say anything.
Well, what do you think about this policy?
I think this policy has done a lot of damage. And that's not just a supposition. You can put real numbers behind that. And I don't like to be in a position of explaining to the president of the seminary why my church is whacking infants. But I didn't explain that. I said, David, I don't understand this any more than you do. Because there is nothing in LDS theology that I know of that justifies whacking infants. They are pure and sin-free. But we are punishing them with this policy.
And then, so as we, now I don't think we ever answered that other question too. As far as the second article of faith, does it appear that this policy is punishing children for the sins, quote unquote sins, of their parents?
That's what it looks like to me. You're not punishing an infant for its own sins because it's sin free.
Right.
Is this a punishment? Yeah, it is.
Because there are some who would argue it's not.
Let them argue then. Because I'll go back to what I said earlier, that this is the rite of passage within the LDS tradition, within other Christian traditions, whereby an infant is accepted by the religious community and named. I give you a name and a blessing. We are denying that to that infant. Denying the name and denying the blessing. Is that punishment? Yeah, in my book it is.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Greg Prince. We're not done with him yet. We'll bring back Greg for some other conversations. It was a fun conversation. But I want to return back with Ann Wild. She's a polygamy expert. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about two groups with similar foundings. The FLDS Church, which most of you have heard of, and Centennial Park, which I'm guessing most of you haven't. They have a very similar founding, and one of the things we know with the FLDS Church, with Warren Jeffs in jail, their community has kind of shrunk. I asked Anne if some of the members of the FLDS community went to Centennial Park.
Oh, no, they will not join Centennial Park, unless it's a very rare occasion. Centennial Park has been there to help their teenagers. They've offered their homes, opened them up if they needed a place to stay. But to followers of Warren, that's the enemy, because they broke away from, in their idea, from their priesthood. So they don't have priesthood. They are apostates, you know. So they consider Centennial Park the enemy, whereas Centennial Park has opened up their homes if they would take advantage of it.
Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.